Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, I'm Sarah Pascoe.
Hello, I'm Carrie Adloyd.
And we're weird about books.
We love to read.
We read too much.
We talk too much.
About the too much that we've read.
Which is why we've created
The Weirdos Book Club.
Join us!
A space for the lonely outsider to feel accepted and appreciated.
A place for the person who'd love to be in a real book club but doesn't like wine or nibbles.
Or being around other people.
Is that you? Join us.
Check out our Instagram at Sarah and Carrie Ads Weirdos Book Club for the upcoming books we're going to be discussing.
You can read along
and share your opinions.
Or just skulk around in your raincoat like the weirdo you are.
Thank you for reading with us. We like reading with you.
This week's book guest is Briefly, A Delicious Life by Nell Stevens. What's it about? It's about a 14-year-old ghost spying on the writer George Sand and her lover Chopin during winter in Mallorca.
What qualifies it for the Weirdos Book Club? Well, the narrator is a sexy ghost.
In this episode, we discuss
creative geniuses,
parenting,
France,
big trousers,
travel,
and beef curtains. Trigger warning, in this episode, we very briefly discuss eating disorders and baby loss. Hello, welcome to Weirdos Book Club.
Hello. I was actually reading.
What a great thing to be doing.
At a book club.
I wouldn't want to stop you. Do you want to carry on?
Imagine if there were nightclubs where everyone just took a book.
There is. It's just started in New York, or was it Paris? And
somewhere we can't go.
Yeah, no, but it was somewhere like, so it's like for people who don't want to read alone, they have a cafe and they arrange like from 7 till 8:30, everyone's going to sit here and read. Mm. And everyone brings their own book and just reads. And then afterwards you can have a drink and talk about it if you want to. Okay. But the idea is that you're not like just reading.
That's wonderful. What I want to make sure for them, maybe I'll be the door woman, is that sounds like inviting those creeps to go, what you're reading.
Yeah. I also thought I like reading in a very comfortable, like I want to be comfy and a cafe is not comfy enough. I want sofa or bed, lots of cushions.
Oh, comfort. I see. Okay. But there's something so lovely about sitting up. Also, I would worry about the book I was taking because I'd want other people to go like, oh, she's reading that.
Yeah, you would be.
There's not a single person
who hasn't really thought about their book choice, obviously.
Yeah.
Because it is like, it's like, you know.
If you're rereading Harry Potter, you probably wouldn't take.
You probably wouldn't take.
No.
I've got the audiobook, guys. I'm just listening to it.
Yeah.
This week, we are talking about Briefly, A Delicious Life by Nell Stevens.
Briefly is in the title, not like we are talking briefly. So you had already read this book.
I read this book a couple of years ago. It was long listed for the Dylan Thomas Prize.
Is that why you chose it?
No. Instagram.
Oh, so it's another Insta
read. It's another Instagram. I follow people who do recommend good books. Can't remember who.
Did you know that they've shown that other people recommending a book is really influential, but someone recommending their own book does absolutely nothing?
I could have told him that from my own Instagram experience.
But it's because what we want is someone else to go, this is why I enjoyed this, not an author go, I promise it's good.
So you know when you follow a couple of people who are into reading and if they recommend a book and you read it and it's good, then you're like, it's like if someone recommends a skincare product. Anyway, I read it and so this was a reread for me. But this was your first foray into Briefly Just.
Yes, but so you've been talking about this one for a while.
I have been going on about
it. And I started it about 6 months ago and thought, well, it's a ghost. And I put it down again. So shall we briefly summarise?
Yeah, because it is a bit confusing.
Because when I said to you, it's a ghost book, you were like, no, not really. It's like,
really confused me because my memory of it is about George, the writer George Sand.
George, is it?
George Sand.
Not George. Yeah.
Well,
George Sand. Okay.
But should we call it George?
George Sand. I would love to, yes.
George Sand and Chopin.
Yes.
The famous musician. And it's based on a true story that they were in a relationship together and they went to Mallorca, one winter with her two children. So this is a true thing that happened.
And we've mentioned it before on the podcast, yes. actually, when we were talking about Deborah Levy's yes, memoir.
Who also goes to Mallorca.
And is it the same place they're staying?
The same place.
I mean, I love that. I reckon yeah. that should be an advert on our podcast. This hotel.
Yes, hotel.
That used to be a monastery.
Yeah, George Sand. Sorry, I'm desperately trying not to say George Sand.
No, you can say George.
No, it's awful.
I can't. You can.
I've never heard people say George Sand. I've heard everyone go George Sand.
Oh, and no one's ever spoken to me about her. Oh, okay. I've only ever seen it written down. Okay. We have very different lives.
So
this is why when I met you at university, I was like, oh, I'm nearly middle class.
What did you say once when we were living together? Radio 4 was on and you turned it off crossly and you said, I'm not having that on. I've crossed the line if it's on in the kitchen for no reason. And I was like, oh, gosh, yeah, that is middle. Oh, okay. You said I'll take hummus, but I'm not having Radio 4 on for no reason. I digress. So one of the reasons I think writers write about this is George wrote about it herself. So she wrote a book called A Winter in Mallorca, I think, mm-hmm. about her experience of being in Mallorca with Chopin.
Off season.
She got a cheap deal. It's cheap, guys. And so in my memory, that's what this book is about. But you're right. It's told from the point of view of a ghost. So when you said to me, yeah, well, this ghost is a bit weird, I was like, oh, yeah, completely forgotten the ghost.
So it is. It's mainly set in Mallorca in that sort of several
yeah.
months. And the narration, which I originally not disliked, I never dislike anything.
Yes.
But I thought, why have you chosen a teenage girl to tell me this
girl
story?
Ghost but who then haunts the monastery, but died 300 years before yes. even George and Chopin are there.
And has her own tragic story. But I realised afterwards, as a narration technique, this is what I wrote down on the way here. As a narration technique, it means that she can read people's thoughts, yep. as in what
she
they're thinking at the time.
Every single character.
She can
thoughts.
Feel their sensations, which means that she can describe touch and smell. And also, she has this ability to see the past through people's memories, yep. even if they're not thinking about those things.
And their future.
And the future.
Yeah.
So as a narration technique, it's very, very clever.
It's great.
Yeah.
And she was a teenage girl when she died, but she's been conscious as a ghost for 300 years, so she has matured in that time, which she talks about. Mm. She hasn't stayed as a 14-year-old. She's learned and changed and realised that she's possibly queer or bisexual in that process as well. Mm. She used to fantasise about the beautiful men in Mallorca and that, and then she falls in love with different women in this process. So she has quite a big storyline going on as well. But I agree with you. I guess if she didn't have the ghost character, then you'd be jumping between George, her children, and Chopin.
Which yeah, third person narrator often does and would do without feeling the need.
But this, you only get one person. It's always from one person's perspective.
But I did sometimes feel like there was a slight separation from someone going, oh, let me look at their thoughts. Their thoughts are these, rather than a writer just going, they're thinking about this.
Yeah.
But I wondered if that distance was supposed to be there. I was supposed to be looking at it all.
Yeah.
Not deeply inside someone telling me who George Sand is.
Yeah, and I wonder if that's because George Sand is so, her work is so well known and she's such a figure, iconic figure, that actually, and lots have been written about her, she was more famous in her lifetime than Victor Hugo.
Right, so I know nothing about George Sand.
Yeah, she was incredibly famous,
yeah,
prolific writer, and dressed as a man, and yes. sort of left her husband.
I mean, it's very difficult to imagine anyone more cool.
She's fucking cool, and you know what? She's also beautiful. So she really is beautiful.
The first scene in this, which is her staying up all night,
yes, the writing,
smoking a fucking cigar,
dressed in man's clothes,
writing by hand, and I guess being so consumed with what she's writing, drinking a cold cup of coffee,
yeah.
You know, it's been cold for 3 hours. And especially as someone with no time to ever be
she
creative or lose myself.
Kids,
I'm not allowed to smoke cigars around my baby. and I started Googling big men's trousers.
And also what I love is she decides to start wearing the clothes of a man purely practically because she's like, I can move better.
Well, that's it. The description.
It's easier.
The description of walking, speeding around Paris in boots when you've been sort of disabled really by brittle kitten heels.
Yeah, and frilly skirts. And also she talks about going to, men are only allowed in the cheap seats of the theatre.
Yeah, so she can't even
absorb
culture.
So she can't go and see the plays of Paris. So she dresses a man, she can get these cheap tickets and you're like, she's fucking cool. George is so cool.
Biographically, from what you know, everything in this book is pretty based on the biography of George Sand?
Yeah, it's definitely, Nell Stevens has definitely done hardcore research.
Yeah.
There's a few things that I think she may have, not embellished, but you know, when a writer wants that to be true.
Yes.
When
you make
I was
a choice.
Looking, I was like, I'm not quite sure how much evidence there is for that.
Yeah.
But yes, like, her real name was like Aurora something, yes, yeah. And she did change her name to George Sands based on a relationship she was having with a man after
So Julian Sand, which was the first lover and the name that she took for her first novel, is that a real writer?
Yeah, it's a real writer. He's not, Sand was his pet name. That's okay. Where she nicked that from. And the J is taken from that. But yes, he was a real writer and she really did leave her husband and leave her kids in the countryside and go to Paris and then shacked up with him and then shacked up with a woman, an actress, and then sculptors, artists, or men. Just
gets so cool.
Sort of doing what she like. At one point, she's like advising the government about something.
Of course she is. Who else would you ask?
I know.
Give me that lady in trousers.
Yeah. She did have this on-off relationship with Chopin for 10 years, which I didn't know anything about until I picked this book up.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, as I started reading it, I was like, because I knew the word George Sand and I knew Chopin, but I was like, what? It was like finding out they date. It was like, they dated?
Yeah.
And I feel like this about all modern culture because I have no idea who anyone is these days.
Sure.
So if I see, you know, when people are like, oh, did you not know they were like, are they?
Yeah.
When did that happen?
Oh, yeah. Like who? Taylor Swift and a footballer?
Yeah, well, I know that, but I don't know who he is or anything about it.
Yeah. Do you know what I keep thinking about? It's slightly different, but it's also the same.
Yeah.
The ponds in Highgate and it being Harry
Styles.
We can say this,
I think. My friend goes to the ponds in the morning.
Yeah.
And the men's pond. And when he was there the other morning, there was only 6 men there.
Yeah.
3 normal men.
Yeah.
And the other 3 Benedict Cumberbatch, James Corden, and Harry Styles.
So I keep thinking about that. Maybe that's my novel.
Yeah. But
why are they all in a pond?
For Benedict's sake, I want to say this. My friend said it was very clear that James Corden and Harry Styles were there together, Benedict by himself.
So that's
and he was trying to make it very clear that he was not here with James Corden.
So that's the beginning of my story. Because like either Harry Styles and James Corden are friends or...
Yeah, I think they're friends.
You're famous, I'm famous, we're all in a pond.
Yeah, and Benedict was like, I'm here for swimming, I came alone, I didn't know you were going to be here.
In 20 years when he was with my novel, they were like, everyone was in Highgate Ponds at the same time? What was the ducks
what
of
was
thought?
What was happening?
Yeah,
it is one of those things where when I started reading this one, I was like, I had no idea they were together. But they were together a decade, they did fall out towards the end. I'm very sad.
Yeah.
She didn't go to his funeral.
And was the detail about her daughter...
Which true. Is a bit of a spoiler. Spoiler, spoiler, spoiler.
Oh, no, it's not a spoiler if it's true biographically.
I couldn't find enough details, but yeah, something. It did seem like George Sand's daughter, Solange.
Yes.
Solange as well, because it's Beyonce's sister that was throwing me the whole way through.
Yeah.
Solange.
That's not really Beyonce's sister, by the way.
Oh, okay. Solange, definitely perhaps when she became 17, perhaps something was happening with her and Chopin because George took her away from Chopin at that point in reality.
Mm.
But I feel like Nell Stevens has made a story that...
Perhaps a presumption.
She's written Solange's thoughts of like...
She loves
yeah,
him.
I did want something to happen. But from what I was looking in reality, I'm not sure how much evidence... She didn't marry him, for example. But I think there probably was something going on between Chopin and the daughter. And the daughter, George Sand's daughter, Solange, was a writer.
Yeah.
And Maurice was also a writer, became a writer and an illustrator. The whole family seem... Amazing, basically. And George Sand's grandmother, who she talks about in the book, this book as well, also was like a women's rights activist. Mm. And like incredible, amazing bohemian family.
Yeah. Do you think knowing a bit of the biography helps with the reading? Because obviously I had none. And I did keep wondering, you know, like with Julia, I was like, oh, I would hate to read this if I hadn't read 1984. I've not read any George Sand novels.
Yeah.
And so several of them are talked about.
Well, I haven't either.
Influences. What really makes me want to read them.
Yeah.
And then I wonder if I wish I'd done it the other way around.
Yeah. When I first read it, I didn't know anything.
Right, okay.
So then I went and started digging around to be like, actually, what is true here? So I think you can still enjoy this book. Both of us knew nothing.
Definitely enjoyable.
Probably you can probably enjoy it
more. And even
if
every character was made up, like I don't know what Chopin's music sounds like.
Oh, I went and listened to it after the book. Did you not want to?
No. It's just for such dweebs. Other people are taking MDMA and dancing and you're going off to listen to a little bit of Chopin because the book was so inspiring.
What was embarrassing is I was like, didn't you go and listen to it, Sarah? Didn't you want to take the MDMA? I've never taken MDMA.
Oh, really?
You were once cool.
I wasn't.
You're cooler than I was. I've always had Radio 4 in the background.
So you listen to some Chopin?
Because yeah. She names some of the chapters specific.
Yes, yes.
And again, I can't think what the word is.
So this is the trouble when
prelude,
you read something.
Prelude number 9
when you read
in E
something
major.
That you don't understand, because I don't understand music, especially don't understand classical music, I go, nah, like my brain just goes, not relevant.
Oh, it was really nice to listen to it.
Was it?
Because it was amazing. Yeah,
really?
All these preludes, yeah. It's funny when you don't know how lame you are.
No, please. No.
We know when you're like, this is one of those things that happened to me my entire life. And I'm like, why are people laughing? Like, doesn't everyone do this? This is my life experience of like, you don't realise something is super not cool until sometimes it's
not. It's not about not cool. I actually think
it's so sincere.
The earnestness.
I'm a
very
earnest
it's gorgeous. It's gorgeous.
I'm
and it's wonderful.
I'm a deeply earnest person.
And it's probably what's lacking from a lot of our lives.
That's what I've always said. I don't need to take MDMA because I'm listening to Chopin and reading books. I'm pretty happy.
There's a really beautiful description of Chopin playing the piano, and at this point he's playing a piano that's awful and out of tune.
Oh, yeah.
And got these mute
it doesn't
notes
work properly.
But the cascading sound.
Yeah. So Chopin, he's very sickly. He's sort of got, everyone thinks he's got consumption and he's not well and he's coughing. And the reason they go to Mallorca is to try and get him better.
Yeah.
Now this is incredible, because she takes him to Mallorca in the winter, and when they arrive there, our ghost is like, Blanca, her name is like, but it's about to be freezing here. Like, they don't even know that it's not a place, it's not winter sun place. Like, it gets these storms, and it's cold, and it's damp.
Yeah.
And she takes him to this monastery, which is between two mountains, so it gets no sunshine.
Do you know why they chose Mallorca?
I feel like George just did what the fuck she wanted and often did things wrong. Like, yes. I think she just got it wrong.
Well, and then that is...
She should have gone to the
south of
France.
Creative people do find sort of that sort of planning.
Yeah, it feels like difficult. She just gets a bee in her bonnet. Like, oh yeah, Mallorca, that's where we should go. And she just finds this monastery and drags a very sick man, Chopin, who's deeply sick, her two children.
With them trying to get her children away from their dad, who had attempted to kidnap them and done things like that.
Yeah.
Maybe that was the other reason to be somewhere where he wasn't going to be able to easily find
Although,
them.
Although, no, I don't think so, because by this point she has custody.
Okay.
And you say kidnap, he took Solange for 2 weeks and then she screamed and then she was taken back. Mm. I don't think he actually wants his kids, the dad.
He wants to hurt her.
And also the implication, which is also based on truth, is that Solange is not his.
Yeah.
That her husband, definitely Maurice, is his son, but Solange is fathered by someone else because they were both having so many affairs at that time.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
When you write about a character like this, I guess being so independent.
Yeah, so independent, so impulsive for a woman.
It's very hard to imagine how annoying they might be.
Oh, I think she does.
Person.
Yeah, and I think Nell Stephens does that quite well because Blanca loves George. Mm. So this 14-year-old ghost who has become more mature is in love with George, wants to have sex with George, wants to be her. But I think you get across from Blanca's irritation at how much stuff she gets wrong.
Mm.
Like that great scene where she goes down to try and buy food, but she's dressed as a man and she's smoking. She brings her kids. Her daughter's also dressing as a man and she's rude and they don't turn up to mass. Like, you can see that George has no consideration for any rules, which of course is like, oh, that's cool. But equally, when you drop into society, which is deeply Catholic and, you know.
And also they speak Spanish.
They speak Spanish. They make no attempt to speak Spanish. Yeah. Or if they do, it's in this terrible accent. And I feel like she captures the madness of George's character in that she doesn't seem to...
The frenetic energy of her.
This energy that she has is amazing, but there seems to be no ability to think what other people are...
There's a couple of times where she sort of disregards what's going on with her children.
Oh yeah,
and I wouldn't say it's anywhere near neglect. I would say it's distraction.
It's on the edge of neglect.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
So there's a situation with her daughter.
Comes
yes.
back from being attacked
with rocks,
and she's like, "Oh, you're fine."
Well, she doesn't even really absorb what she looks like. What's happened to her? She's. Saying,
I think George sees what she wants to see, and I do think Nell Stevens has got that across. That the cat. I feel like you really get a sense of this woman. George and how unusual she is, and Chopin, and I think she's kind of, it's a bit of a study in art, isn't it, because they're both these great artists who clearly, when they are doing the thing they're meant to do, are amazing.
With both of them, she describes these like sort of like twitchy fingers when they're doing stuff that isn't composing or writing, and that as a symbol is enough to go, they don't want to be there, they don't want to be in the market,
like real
they don't
life want to be there. Is not their consideration.
They're trying to remember that thing they were just doing that they want to get back to.
And it's interesting, isn't it, because we're so used to like male artist figures, you know, being these geniuses and having a wife that does everything. And I think it's interesting that Chopin chose and was attracted to a woman like George, who was his equal, who wasn't going to like, I'll take care of you, I'll do everything. She tries to take care of him, but she sort of, as her son says, he's ill when you take care of them, he's ill when you don't.
Yeah.
like you don't fix the problems. Yes. You're not so caring and nurturing that you make his life easy.
I understood that as him to be saying, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
As in you mustn't think you need to be there for him because you can't stop him being ill.
But it's interesting that like a more traditional wife figure would have made his life better.
But also I feel so defensive of her on that behalf, because it's like you've already got two kids.
Oh yeah, totally.
Well, I mean, this is so annoying.
She
about
is
being a straight woman.
She's taken on a child. That's interesting, isn't it? Because that is a mindset that makes sense in 2024. But that is the mindset that George has.
Yeah.
So I'm not. I definitely wouldn't attack her for it. It's just interesting that at that time, you would expect Chopin to choose a woman who is going to be submissive.
Oh, definitely for a main, that's it. Or usually what they would have is a wife and then lovers.
Yeah.
So you would have a lover who is your equal and your, you know, stimulating company.
And he doesn't.
Company.
He's obviously in love with George, and she is this fascinating, like you said, iconic. And yeah, I looked at some pictures of her and she absolutely stunning. Like she is absolutely beautiful. So I can see why there was this like thing about her. But yeah, it's like two artists trying to survive in normality.
There's a wonderful detail in the book where it says that both of them, you know, finished their work and sold it and got paid.
Yeah.
And I love that practicality of it, because I don't want artists to be, for them, I don't want them to be languishing in poverty. I do want them to be able to do a bit of business as well.
Well, that's what I found interesting, which I didn't know, is that she was so successful in her lifetime. So she was more successful than Balzac.
Yeah.
She's more successful than him and Victor Hugo. She was so well known that Dostoevsky was reading her, mentioning her.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Barrett Browning writes two poems about her. Like,
oh, really?
She was phenomenally successful in her time.
But not, is it just because we didn't do her at uni? Or is she not that widely read anymore?
I think she's huge in France. And I think she's just slightly, I wonder as well, because she's prolific in that way that like, Victor Hugo, he did write Les Mis, didn't he?
Yes,
So like he has one that has been transferred to a musical or a film.
Yeah.
George doesn't seem to have a book that everyone knows.
We should write a musical about it. But so she has a book where the narrator is a ghost, a teenage girl ghost.
George?
Yeah.
This is the bit I was rereading. Yes, she does.
I
don't know what book that's referring to.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing I would love to know.
Yes.
Because I felt like the author was telling me something quite significant, which is this conceit is something... From
it
George
might be
Sand.
A reference, that's fair. I also thought that. She does have a book. Actually, I think it's the Winter in Majorca book. Has been adapted 5 times for Polish television. Oh. And I was like, that must be like in Poland, like a really well-known, like Pride and Prejudice. Like, oh God, another version of George Sand's Winter in Majorca.
Yeah.
I was like, how funny that we don't have anything like that.
We have
all.
Gerald Durrell's My Family and Other Animals, which is a summer in Crete.
It reminded me of My Family and Other Animals, actually. It's very, like, I mean, very different tone. But, like, that same thing of foreigners abroad and the madness that comes with trying to live in a country that before internet or communications or phones, like, how do you get a piano from Paris to Majorca?
Yeah.
And that horrible storm they go through when they go to Parma to try and get the piano back. And,
and essentially they're climbing a mountain
in mud.
In a donkey and cart. And then after a river breaks its banks, just crawling through
mud. Yeah. And like that decision, everybody is saying, the ghost is trying to say to George, like, just stay in this town for the night. All the drivers are like, just stay in this town. But George is like, no, compelled. We have to go back. And that's when you feel like, not negligent mother, but somebody who is not able to put aside the thing that she wants to happen.
Yeah.
And so you as a reader.
It's the definition of single-mindedness, yes. Isn't it? It's like, I've made, it's this, so it's only that.
Yeah.
No other information can be absorbed.
And you as the reader and Blanca the ghost are screaming at her a lot of like, what are you doing? Like you're about to nearly kill yourself and your son because you won't just stay in a town for a night before the storm passes over. Yeah. Like that to me was like, why wouldn't you just... Like, oh, okay, well, we'll go in the morning because it's pissing it down. Like, no, like, I need to go back to this monastery. I mean, she's a fascinating character.
Well, there was such an undercurrent of sex.
Yes.
And not even an undercurrent. It's just such a current of sex running through it. So Blanca's story is so important as a representation of teenage sexuality, female sexuality, which then means that it's not so heavy. She doesn't have to talk so much about Georges and Solanges because we've already heard about some sort of active female desire, passion. Oh, and periods as well.
Oh, so much stuff about periods.
And it's really great to have the presence not only of menstruation, but menstruation when there is no proper pain relief. Like drink a cup of hot water.
I know. Her Blanca's sister says, have hot water, the cramps get too bad. And I was like, I've never heard that.
Well, there's a story in it and one of the very many stories of a girl who doesn't want to menstruate and doesn't know how to stop it and so essentially starves herself.
Yeah, becomes anorexic and dies because she doesn't want these periods. It's a descendant of Blanca's because Blanca obviously stays in Mallorca and watches her family. So occasionally the chapters flick between Blanca watching George and Chopin and then Blanca, there's always these chapters called I Remember where Blanca goes back to what happened to her and her family. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff, isn't there, about menstruation and the female body. This isn't a particular spoiler, I don't think, but Blanca, as a teenager, becomes pregnant completely unknowingly.
Well, the two things you know about Blanca, number one is that she's dead and she died at 14, and then she has descendants. So so what you do know right from the beginning is she must have had a child.
A child, who survives. But she gets pregnant without understanding at all what's happening to her or that she can get pregnant until someone says you're massive, your belly's massive.
Well, yeah, she has the innocence of, so she has all these sexual desires for this novice monk.
Yeah.
And he tells her about sort of washing sperm away, but he doesn't really know
either. He is so clueless.
Yeah.
I hated him.
Did you?
Yeah, I did. Especially on the reread. Because I kind of knew what he was doing. And I was like, oh, you're such a... Yeah, like I felt like I wanted to shout when Blanca starts running after him. You're like, don't go, Blanca! Like, just leave him!
Yeah.
And her sister, Blanca's sister, is like much more traditional and she's marrying the like man in the next village and she's kissed him, but she says to Blanca, obviously I won't do anything until we're married, but she's like, I'll tell you about it if you want. And then Blanca's like, I'm already having sex with this monk. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff about that. I mean, I liked all that. I thought it was really, I suppose, especially in comparison to George.
Yeah.
So you've got this woman who is choosing not to be a woman, really. Like she's not, you know, yes, she's a mother, but she's not mothering like mothers at that time. She's not being a wife like a wife would be at that time. She is sort of completely lost in the middle. So she behaves like a man.
She's untraditional. Yeah. And what we could be considered manly just because really it's free.
Yeah.
That, which is so sad, isn't it?
It's that amazing moment when Blanca first sees her. Kissing Chopin, she thinks it's two men kissing. And she describes how many monks she's seen kissing. I really like that bit. Like all these monks throughout the years that she's seen having affairs, which also made me go, oh yeah, of course they did. Of course monks did that. Back in the 18th century, probably did have affairs. And she sees George and Chopin. She's like, oh, there's these two men. And then she gets closer and is like, oh, that's a woman. And I was like, yeah, you've got this comparison of her sexuality, Solange's sexuality, the other women of the Mallorcan village who are very traditional, you know, very traditional Catholic country. And then George, who just breaks every rule going.
There's a description of George Sand and Chopin's sex as being like how women do it.
Yeah.
But it's really just like a fingering.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting.
It was interesting. I think it was a really great dimension to it.
Yeah.
And I felt like as a writer, that's what she was trying to... if she was asking herself a question in scenes, it was, and what was really happening to the body? What was happening in terms of menstruation, which would be happening to the female the characters with uteruses, whether they liked it or not.
Yeah.
And then what are the characters doing for each other in terms of arousal and then getting each other off. And I felt like she kept going slightly further than I expected her to.
Yeah.
Not in a coconut dildo way, coconut oil dildo way, but in a very like, this is what people have done for hundreds of years.
Yeah. Well, also, I think she was trying to say something about Chopin and George's love, which is, I don't know, isn't it? It's like, well, they do it like two women do. So he's not like...
So there's equality?
Yeah. And also it's like their relationship isn't traditional, I suppose. Mm. Like, you know, she is... the one making decisions, she seems to have more money and control than he does. And then their lovemaking is also not like...
about, and he wants to pleasure her.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because I'm making it sound like, and he did not do it the man way. I'm trying to... because she describes her husband having an affair, doesn't she? George.
Mm.
And that's much more graphic and upsetting.
Yeah.
And really like, you know, she's like, his trousers were down and the maid's skirts are up. And
she can smell her vulva.
Oh, yeah. I thought that was bold.
That's what I mean. She kept going slightly further.
Yeah, yeah. That's true, actually. I hadn't thought of that. Yeah. Because I think you said that to me as well, didn't you? You said, oh, like, isn't that the really sexy one? And I was like, is it? I just remember George Sand and Chopin.
The minute I saw Sarah Waters as the first blurb on the cover, I thought, there's going to be some cunnilingus in this book.
Not enough for my liking, actually.
She was just subtle, but there was actually loads of it.
Yeah, I think I was so surprised that George Sand had a relationship with Chopin. I just couldn't believe it. It was like...
It is really interesting, even when reading slowly,
how much your brain can grip onto certain things
and disregard Madonna and John Grisham.
Yeah, it's like reading a book, being like, I didn't know Madonna and John Grisham were together for 10 years.
Yeah.
Madonna, obviously the modern equivalent of Chopin, everybody.
Yeah.
And John Grisham, the modern day George Sand. That's literally all I could think of.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the cover, they've done that. I think they tend to do this with books with sex that are also about women. Bit of orange peel, fruit.
Yeah.
Forbidden
it's
fruit.
It's because of Stephanie Sarley. Did you ever follow her on Instagram?
No.
It's awful because it got stolen in so many ways, but she used to put a bit of oil on fruit and then finger it.
Oh, yeah.
And then it got stolen by so many companies and adverts, and it was really... And that's all she would do, is she'd just like rub her finger around a mango and then put it in, or yeah, tangerines, and she'd just find all different fruits and it was so suggestive.
Yeah.
But it's just fruit. It's just like beautifully
and
lit.
And they do use that constantly now for women. Pomegranates.
Yeah.
Oranges.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's always like, this is lady sex.
Yeah.
This is not your man
sex. It's because they can't put smell of the vulva on the front.
Great smell of vulva, Sarah Waters.
Yeah.
That's not the quote she wanted to put on there.
They can't put some beef curtains. Sarah! I wish I was in publishing.
You thought Nell Stevens went too far.
No, I was going too far on purpose to say what they can't do.
I've heard the phrase beef curtains in so long.
It's because you're not at school anymore.
Yes, that's what I was saying.
You're at secondary school on the bus.
Why beef?
I should say. That's not the tone she takes in the book, but it's not far off at times.
Yeah.
Because there's an earthiness to it, and it's very, very conscious.
Earthiness is the middle class way of saying beef curtains. Now you've matured.
Yeah.
There's an earthiness to this text.
Yeah.
She mentions your beef curtains a lot.
I've picked up on it a lot because...
You're right.
I'm always very aware when an author decides not to. It's much easier not to.
She definitely goes there.
But there are so many absences of the real body in literature.
Yes, that's
that when true. When an author, especially a female author in a feminist way, says, boom.
Yeah.
She's bleeding.
Yeah. And I love the description of when Solange gets her period.
Yes, I love that. Well, that's why it's
that so great
to have characters being, I guess, naive about it and troubled by the bleeding at the beginning, to then right near the end have a character not be thrown,
yeah,
literally curious about what the blood feels like on their fingers.
Her finger and thumb until it's like, yeah, tissue.
And that's
dry.
And that's so effective because you've had periods the whole way through. Yeah. You can't just suddenly go, and guess what?
You're right, aren't you? Because it's so interesting because you don't. It's so rare you get that in literature. So it's so rare we understand what a female character thought of her period.
Mm.
Was actually, that's fucking telling.
Yes.
What a character thought of getting their first
period. What they know is their relationship with their body, their relationship with
their mother.
Shame, their mother, sex.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah, I think it
should be applauded when it happens. Like, one of the really exciting things about Fleabag and Girls was having sort of television representations of
Broad City. Do you remember Broad City when that came up as well? And you were just like, oh, they're talking like how women do talk when they're having these conversations. I've never seen that before.
Yeah, because it adds a whole other dimension.
Well, you also realise how fake everything's been. And when you see a real one, you're like, oh, yeah, that every female conversation I've seen in films has sort of been not how women really speak. Yeah. I've been watching shadow versions.
It's a man who hasn't listened to any women imagining. And that's why it's like pillow fights in our pants.
Oh, God. Did you like it?
I did like it. It made me want to read George Sand, firstly.
Okay.
So George Sand, the original, as in from her own
perspective. Original French. Maybe, you'd like to read the original French.
It made me want to go back to the source. It made me want to know about so many other things.
Yeah.
I didn't love the narration.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's not, didn't like it. And that's not a criticism of it. It felt a bit teenagery because it was narrated by a teenager.
Yeah.
And then there would be occasional passages where I think, oh, that's such a lovely passage, which I guess is me sort of coming out of it a bit.
Yeah.
I felt I didn't, you know, some books, the second you read them, you're inside them. I didn't have that. I felt like I was reading a book.
It's funny because I loved it the first time.
Mm.
But I think, again, because I didn't know like George or Chopin. And so I felt like all every chapter you were like, and then what happened? And then what happened? Like, what are they going to do? And the reread, I found it a bit trickier because I was like, it felt like there was lots of stories because there is Blanca has her massive own story about her family and what happened to her and how she died. And
I have to say, I
didn't love the reread, but who rereads books unless you have a book podcast?
Yeah.
I've never reread so many books.
Also,
I loved the first read. I'd recommend it.
I've got no criticisms of it. It's more, I guess we're reading so much at the moment and some books, the second you start, and the sentence is sort of enveloped. And you're like, oh my God, I'm so glad I'm reading this.
Yeah.
This was a very, very enjoyable read. And I'm sure it's a read that I will, in my life, which is hopefully very long, and I'll have many lovers, I will occasionally push on someone and go, oh, you're going to Mallorca?
I've
got a book you could read. Or, you're listening to Chopin.
And I mean this in a nice way. It's quite a good holiday read.
It really makes you want to go on holiday and wear big trousers. And
but then, also because it's not too, like...
There's a scene in it where they dance in the rain.
Yeah,
and so,
so even
if you're on holiday and it suddenly rains, I think you'll feel better about it.
Because your book must reflect your holiday. I meant like, I don't think it's asking too much of your brain, but it's a good story. And I think especially if you don't know those characters, you're like, wow, what amazing people who lived like all those time ago. Like, this is amazing.
And actually, that's the thing about the narrator is that she does give it a lightness, even where there's lots of, I mean, there's child death. There's
Yes, there is a lot of stuff in there.
And because she is, you know, from the past looking into the future, that means every character, you know, is dead.
Yeah. Spoiler, Chopin is dead.
Yeah, and that's what I thought. Like, yeah, you know that these people are dead.
I really enjoyed it. And that's what also having, because a lot of the stuff I sometimes read is very heavy. I think I really enjoyed it when I read it 2 years ago because it was like, it's just someone telling me a story.
It's very sensory and it's very evocative.
Yeah.
I think the people who write that on the back are right.
And you know what I'm like about sizing? It's not so light that you're going to finish it too quickly, but it's not so heavy.
You're not far off weighing books before you read them.
Oh, I'm there. You put that in your bag, you're not going to feel it. You get it out, you're not going to be annoyed at holding it.
It's normal paperback size.
Normal paperback size.
I think exactly right what you say. It's a page turner you could take on holiday, but also if you wanted to delve more deeply into it, I think it offers you that.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And offers you a bibliography afterwards as well.
Does it?
No, it's in like, you can then go and read George Sand and you can listen to Chopin and you can...
Dear Nell Stevens, I seem to be missing my bibliography from my copy.
Don't worry, I YouTubed the Chopin and found that.
We should do a George Sand.
Are you going to read the bit for the last line?
Some nights she did nothing but write, and others she did nothing but cross out what she had written the night before. Several times she fed pages to her candle as carefully as though she was spooning porridge to an infant.
Oh, I love that. That's great.
It's beautiful. And also, I guess that's the thing about the mothering being used for writing rather than the actual kids, which I love.
Five weirdos, thumbs up. That sounds so wrong, doesn't it?
Fingered five oranges.
Six pomegranates and a bit of oil.
Grape up your ass.
And close those beef curtains. Thank you for listening to the Weirdos Book Club.
And next week's book guest is Send Nudes by Saba Sams.
Sarah's novel Weirdo and my book You Are Not Alone are both available now. And
check out our Instagram at Sarah and Carrie Ads Weirdos Book Club for the upcoming books we're going to be discussing.
Thank you for reading with us.
We like reading with you.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen,
premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hi, I'm Lucy Beaumont.
And guess what? I'm Sam Campbell.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, you might enjoy our podcast. It's called Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains.
We have a podcast and it might be, I probably don't want to sound, you know, like I'm bragging, but it's dynamite. It is electric. It's high voltage. And please, we really need you to listen. You don't understand how much we need this.
Is it on all the platforms?
Oh, it absolutely is. But this one's out now. Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains.